Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Friday, May 26th, 2017. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuadita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who is trying to return from vacation.
The poor deer is stuck in Tahiti.
Hey, it's honest. He was supposed to be home last night, and flight was canceled. That is Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Don't complain to me. But yeah, he's stuck there, and he's trying to make it home, hopefully, this weekend. You can check out some great shots from his trip, which has been extended on his Facebook page. Ray Allen is running the show from inside the control booth. Thanks, Ray. The Buckmaster Show is heard live Monday through Friday from noon to 1 p.m. here on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. And we are live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. The Friday show also re-airs on Saturday at 4 p.m. And you can also find archives of past shows at buckmastershow.com. On Fridays, Bill likes to give a tip of the hat to the Buckmaster Show media partners. They are TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, Green Valley News, Sahuadita Sun, Southern Arizona News Examiner, TucsonLifestyle.com, and the Three Sonorans. In today's Friday Focus interview, we will be talking to Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent for the Sahuadita Unified School District, a district that stretches just over 600 square miles, if I'm correct, and that's over double what TUSD covers by comparison. I am joined by Dylan Smith, who you heard from earlier, publisher and editor of TucsonSentinel.com. Welcome, Dylan.
Thanks for having me on, as you are filling Bill's large shoes.
Very large shoes, and I'm glad it's coming to an end because he always makes it look a lot easier than it is. But don't you wish you were stuck in Tahiti?
You know, it is a pretty nice day. It actually struck me as I was walking out my door this morning what a beautiful day it was in Tucson. But in comparison...
Yeah, don't lie to me.
I'm not going to shine you on here. I would take being, trapped in Tahiti for an extra 24 hours. Oh, no.
We'll see if he actually makes it home sometime this weekend. If you want to join the discussion, you can call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. Dr. Valenzuela, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate and am grateful for the opportunity to be here.
And it's always good to have you on here. We have a lot of great stuff going on down in Sahuadita Green Valley area. We recently sent a reporter on two bus trips. A lot of people don't know that the district stretches all the way to Amato and to Aravaca. And some of these kids are on the bus one way, an hour and 15 minutes.
No, absolutely. We do cover a very wide area, many square miles, and we strive very diligently to provide them with excellent service. We can't control how far away they live, but we strive to bring them to school back and forth safely every single day.
And a lot of these kids, they said, you know what, worth the trip. We love living out in the country, and Aravaca is very beautiful. It's just gorgeous out there. And I also have to give a shout out to the bus drivers. We met a couple of them, and just remarkable ladies who are doing this tough job every day, and man, they got it down.
Yes, sir, I would agree with you. And we have over 800 employees. We continue to grow. And every one of them, I feel blessed to say, has a commitment to delivering excellence and serving our students in a high-quality way, and I'm grateful.
Well, good, and thank you guys for giving us access. It was a long ride for the reporter, but she actually enjoyed it.
You didn't take the ride, then?
You know what? I was sleeping because I think they're on the road at, what, 5:30 in the morning?
Yes, sir.
Good grief. That is a good time to be boss and say, no, you're going instead. So Kim Smith did that story. It's online if you want to read it. This is a big week for not only your district, but also a lot of districts around the Tucson area are sending seniors off into the real world. Sahuadita High and Walden Grove had their graduation ceremonies this week. How many kids did we graduate?
We're very proud to share that we have successfully graduated approximately 425 young adults who are off and ready to take their own pathways in their adult lives. We are very proud of the fact they collected over $8 million in scholarships to various post-secondary opportunities, and that's an all-time high. It's about 25-30% more than even last year, so we're very proud.
Very good, and we enjoy not only telling their story, but also checking up on them in a year or two and see how their paths are going, and the district is giving them a really good start, so we appreciate that. You guys had an interesting situation this year. The valedictorian of the Walden Grove class of 2017, her name is Alexa Alvarenga, did not speak. How come?
Right. That was an incident that emerged over the course of the last several weeks. And basically what happened is that at that school there is a process where students who are interested in having the opportunity to speak at commencement exercises have to put in a request and go through a process to be considered. And that's part of just making sure that speakers that are identified are those that not only desire to speak, but that they're also producing speeches and narratives that are reflective of the limited public forum of the school, and that they reflect upon the themes and the decorum that is expected at graduation. In this case, basically what happened is that in the principal's review, there became an emerging pattern of concern regarding the individual's commitment and engagement with delivering a product that met that criteria. And after multiple steps in a process and being offered an opportunity to speak after originally not being able to speak, the individual chose not to speak at the assigned place, and we respectfully understand that, and so we moved on.
So the speech eventually did get to the point where the district felt that it was acceptable, and then Alexa was offered an opportunity to speak to a senior night event, which was a couple of days before the graduation ceremony. Is that accurate?
That's basically accurate. Yes, Dan.
Okay, so allowing her to speak at the senior night instead of at commencement, isn't that like giving the first place finisher the silver medal?
Well, the way that we've inferred it and approached this is that there are X number of slots, and it's about placing and creating the best fit for the individual based on the evidence that emerges over the course of this process. And as this process moved along, it was determined by the school administration that although there were some concerns that were significant enough.
What were those concerns? You're kind of dodging around the point of why the district wanted to censor this student's graduation
right.
speech.
Well, as you know, Dylan, a school setting is a limited public forum, which means you want to encourage, obviously, free speech, but it's not free speech without any kind of boundaries, and so there are parameters, and there were concerns about the content and the delivery, and really the confidence in that what would be delivered would be appropriate for that setting. And we did work with the individual to provide the opportunities to make those corrections, and through multiple indicators we were concerned that
so
that
I'll press you one more time. What was the concern? You're not saying.
You're not telling.
You know
what? I will tell you that it has to do with the content and the repeated inability to make corrections that were requested, which raised the principal's concern about confidence in the individual's delivering the speech that was appropriate. In terms of the details, out of the privacy rules that affect the student, even though she's not a student right now, but it was in the context of a student. We've been very respectful about not divulging that, and I'll continue to maintain that stand.
But what I don't understand is why she would be trusted to deliver a speech at one event but not at another.
Right, and I think that when the process moved to the point where the young lady created a product where there was confidence that it was approaching appropriateness. I think what happened, Dan, is that it was determined that there was progress made, and through the dialogue that they were willing to continue to work. Even though the concerns were still there, they were willing to work through the process, but felt that this other environment would be a better setting based on the previous evidence. It never got to the point where the final product was created in our process with her, because she and her family chose not to participate and to withdraw from the opportunity to speak. I do believe since after that, Your organization had a conversation with her. She produced a speech that we had not previously seen, but I must say I read that speech and I thought it was very, very good.
It was remarkable, and you can read it online. This was the fourth graduating class for Walden Grove. This is the first time that a valedictorian has not spoken. We were talking off the air, and you said that nationally that's almost a trend. Sarita High School, which has been around for years and years, have they ever not had the valedictorian speak at commencement?
No, actually, Dan, historically, that is the kind of the American tradition that the valedictorian and salutatorian do speak. I'm not aware of any previous time in Sarita High School history where that's not happened, although I do know that Walden Grove has kind of moved to this more recent trend that seems to be emerging regionally, statewide, and nationally, where, you know, there's less emphasis on this tradition and there are different protocols for selecting student speakers. And that has happened at Walden Grove since its inception and since it was first opened several, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago now.
Okay. So overall, then, we can maybe see this in the future, then, that really what you're trying to get is a flavor of the school in the speakers and not necessarily the top student as rated by GPA.
That's basically correct.
Okay, and this is a school policy. Does Sarita High School have that policy?
No, and I did want to clarify because, you know, sometimes the word policy is used. You know, the policies are the guiding principles and rules of the board. This does not violate any policy of the board because these decisions are at the leadership discretion of the administrative staff at the school. And that's why it's totally okay and within policy for one school to have slightly different practices in regards to something like this. And we support that site-based autonomy.
Okay, so this policy will be in place going forward also.
I've not heard otherwise, Dan.
Okay, you are listening to the Buckmaster Show, and we are talking to Manny Valenzuela. He's the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. We will be right back for more of our Friday Focus interview.
Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Named after the classic New Orleans cocktail, Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
This is T. Van Hook, CEO of Habitat for Humanity Tucson. Are you or someone you know ready to purchase a safe, affordable home? We are currently seeking individuals and families to become the owners of new and refurbished homes in the greater Tucson area. At Habitat Tucson, we believe that everyone deserves a decent, affordable place to call home. For information, visit us at habitattucson.org or call us at 326-1217. Habitat Tucson is an equal housing opportunity provider.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than 24 Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and we're always on buckmastershow.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com is joining me as we talk to Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuarita Unified School District. Manny, we talked earlier about how our area, Sahuarita, is experiencing a lot of growth. And when new development comes in, there's an impact. There's an impact on water. There's an impact on wastewater. There's an impact on schools. We have a new development coming in and probably won't be there for a couple of years, but I'm going to guess it's going to dump hundreds of students into the district. What are, and I don't want to talk specifically about that development, right. I want to talk in general, what are the expectations or the obligations of a new development when they come into a community and they're about to dump hundreds of kids into the district?
Well, thank you, Dan, for that question. Personally, I'd rather not use the word dump. welcome the emergence of a growing, vibrant community. But the impact
is... Did they just actually pull up with a dump truck right in the schoolyard and the kids kind of come tumbling out?
Objection duly noted.
We welcome that. We welcome our students. And we're very proud. We like to believe that through a lot of collective and intentional effort, we're growing and we want to continue to becoming the kind of place where people do want to go. The funding in Arizona is a very interesting concept, and it's multifaceted. On the operation side, it's basically funded twofold. It's part of it is based on local property taxes, based on a specific qualifying tax rate, and it's pretty uniformly, the formula is pretty uniform. And then the other part is funded through what's called state aid. For us, it's about 50-50, depending on the relative property wealth of the district. It might be more or less. That formula would continue, and theoretically, as you're growing a bigger tax base, it would proportionally support that growth, and there wouldn't be a tremendous impact. The biggest challenge that growth has for us, and we're working on it, we've worked on it with other developers, and we're working on it with the one that you mentioned, is that we need more space. When you get more people coming into your area, and you need additional classroom space and facilities and fields, and those things cannot be built overnight. And the problem right now, Dan and Dylan, is the state of Arizona has a formula and a program for funding them, but only this year. I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, I'm encouraged that the budget and the legislature has appropriated some funding for that. But historically, the appropriation has been very basically zero in the last half dozen or so years. And so what that means is that you create a problem where overcrowding could emerge very quickly and you could really get in an unfortunate situation. We've been very blessed, very fortunate. Our community has stepped up and sacrificed, and we know that it's a state's obligation, but they've stepped up. We're currently building a K-8 school for 700 or 800 students to help take the current pressure off of the main campus primarily of our district. But as we grow, we're going to need to tackle this issue, and that's probably going to be the biggest challenge right now going forward.
So then going back to a developer, the expectation is perhaps that they would donate land for a school.
Right. There's been, and that's kind of been an evolving thing, because there really isn't any legal requirement that they do anything. But we've established with our local municipality dialogue and with collaboration with multiple developers, kind of an emerging practice, a norm, if you will, where currently it has involved a percentage of land donations. The last several schools that we've built, we now have 8 going on 9. They've all been done through a land donation from developers. And in addition, the last one we did, the big project with Sahuarita Farms, also includes a rooftop fee, about $1,000, depends on the nature of the development or the houses or apartments. But that's kind of the standard, and that's kind of the norms that have been successful for us and that we hope to implement going forward.
Right, and so we should point out that Rancho Sarita and FICO, which is the pecan orchards, have both donated land for schools. Walden Grove is an example on the trail. They've had donations for schools. And going forward in a growing community, that is the expectation. But like you say, there is no legal obligation for that.
That's exactly right, Dan.
Okay, what's a quick back of a napkin number for how much it takes to put up a new elementary school?
Right, an elementary school is probably about 9 or 10 acres. High school.
Dollar-wise, how much is that going to cost you to get that building and get it furnished?
Oh, the cost that the school that we generously are receiving funding for from our community was formulated at $20 million, and that's for a K-8 school.
Okay, let's move on to some of the decisions that were made in the recent state legislative session. They passed a bill that lets schools basically push aside the state's regular requirements to get a teacher teaching certificate, and allows people instead who have an expertise in a certain area to teach. In short, they lowered the standard for educators because there's a teacher shortage. That's the way I'm going to put it. Now, would you agree with that assessment, and what do you think of the idea?
I think like a lot of things, they're kind of laced with both good intentions, good, and also serious concerns. You know, I understand the concept that, you know, given the rising tuition costs, the relatively flat salaries, although thankfully we're trying to make progress in that area, and the growing demands of the teaching profession, the supply and demand curve is difficult in that regard, not to mention the negative imbalance in terms of people coming into the profession in contrast to people that are retiring out. So clarify where you were going with the issue of this law. So what they've done is it's good that they're trying to provide access. We've worked very closely to formulate creative solutions through our partnership with the University of Arizona. We're developing a grow your own, build your own, teach your own. We're actually opening a new training site with the University of Arizona on our campus to train, place, develop, incentivize teachers, which is a very positive thing. And opening doors of access and flexibility, I see as very good. Internship-type programs, very good. My concern on the flip side is the idea that in the name of providing, opening the gates a little wider, opening doors to other people who might have expertise, teaching and teaching effectively is a very complex endeavor. Pedagogically, classroom management, individualization, delivery of instruction, it's very complex. And I don't think we're setting people up to come in and support their staying power if we're not providing them with the training and the skills and the expertise, the mentoring, coaching to succeed. So I'm concerned about that. We all want great teachers in our classrooms, but I think it's a balancing act of opening flexibility, but not opening the gates without the corresponding pathways to real training, real certification, real coaching and mentoring.
And so what this law does is it makes it so you don't need to even have a college degree to go be a teacher, and you can take the place of a certified teacher who has a master's degree, which used to be essentially the baseline to go be a good teacher.
And that's the side of this equation that really is concerning to me, because great teaching is a very complex, it's a challenging thing that can't just be assumed. You can't assume that people know how to teach just because they know calculus or literature or anything else.
I should mention while we're talking about this that my wife is a teacher.
Yeah.
And so I have a certain point of view on these things. But, even if you have a college degree and a good deal of experience in a topic, you know, if you're an accountant, that doesn't mean you're going to go be able to be a good math teacher.
I would
just
agree.
Because you know how to do something doesn't mean you have any idea of how to actually teach it, especially to kids.
And I worry on that note, Dylan, that we're not doing what we're trying to do, which is not only get people to teach, but to stay.
D.
Do you suspect that the district's going to take advantage of this new law?
I don't anticipate that it will be a first or second tier priority. We've worked really hard to provide our own capacity building programs, as I mentioned, with the university, also through the growth and development of very methodical staff development programs for teachers at all levels of their career, and through, we're trying really hard with intentionality to create an environment with the community, with recreational programs, with health and wellness initiatives, with intramural programs, with family movie and athletic game nights, to make a community where people want to stay and do those little extra intangibles that hopefully will make them realize that we really do care and we value what they bring to our community.
And that speaks to what really draws young recruits from the teaching ranks. But the fact is that there are fewer people going into teaching, and a lot of it comes right back to the money. How do you address that? Now, the legislature did a little bit this past session, and then we had Prop 123 last year. This is a hurdle for every district in Arizona.
It absolutely is, Dan. Again, when the cost because higher ed is impacted here too, and as tuition has probably doubled in our state universities. I know for a fact from personal experience, just in about the last 8 or 9 years, it's doubled. And then salaries have not increased to compensate for that. The demands continue to go up. The demographic shifts are creating a further supply and demand gap. So there's not as many people going in. And it's still a beautiful, rewarding, excellent profession. I recommend it highly. But we've got to do different things to meet the challenge. What we've done is, as I said, we've tried to create that environment where people want to stay. We tried to invest in people's professional development. But on a basic level, we're trying to focus and prioritize through smarter school budgeting our resources on providing as much of a compensation increase and a base increase as we can. This year, for one simple example, we have one thing that we consider a blessing. It's that we're growing. We're not being dumped on, Dan. We're growing.
Right.
And that allows us to...
I get it.
That allows us to you know, that generates more revenue, which allows us to raise salaries. We also did something intentionally this year, is instead of giving a flat percentage, which, you know, incentivizes people that are already making more, we looked at our particular teacher makeup, and the majority of them are in the first 8 or 9 years. And so we did a flat raise. I think it was $22.50 for everybody, whether it's the superintendent or a first-year teacher. And that allowed those younger teachers to get a higher percentage raise, and we hope to do that to keep them. Not that we don't value our more experienced people, because we've been giving percentage raises over the past several years prior, but it's a balancing act to not only get people to come, but to support their being able to hopefully buy a house and to dig roots in the community and really be vested in the good work we're doing.
Well, very good. I do applaud the efforts at the Sarita Unified School District on teacher recruitment and retention. I know you guys have been really hitting that hard the last few years and have seen it pay off.
Paid off indeed. We have, I can just tell you that we track this very carefully. We've lost about under 10% of our teachers. We have about 360 teachers, and we have 34 or 35 that are leaving. And we ask them why. And a lot of them, I'm moving out of state, personal reasons, family circumstances, other jobs. So we're going to continue to do everything we can. You can't help the fact that people's lives happen and things change.
Does that include teachers who are retiring?
Yes,
as well,
thank you. Yes, it also includes retirees, which is that whole baby boomer shift, continuing shift. So we hope to do everything we can to keep good people in our community.
Okay, that is going to wrap it up for our Friday Focus interview. Our thanks to Dr. Manny Valenzuela with the Sahuarita Unified School District. Dylan Smith is going to stick around for our Friday roundtable discussion. That's where we solve all the world's problems. We will be right back.
This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and Hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who's trying to return from vacation in Tahiti. We think he'll make it sometime this weekend, hopefully.
He might. We might just end up here back on Monday, Tuesday. He might never come back.
I was hoping to get a day off, but we'll see. This is the roundtable portion of our show. Every Friday, we get a couple of people to talk about the issues. Today, it's going to be me and Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. And Dylan, our friends up at the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting put out a story yesterday that was very interesting about a former member of the Arizona Corporation Commission, which we have decided is one of the most important positions out there, but one that people don't really spend a lot of time thinking about.
Down the ballot, and it kind of gets ignored. People don't really dig into it that much, but it is, you know, I say this every time, you know, every election season. It's probably the most important vote that you cast when it comes down to things that will affect your bank account and your everyday life. The Corporation Commission, you know, really controls your utility bills.
Yeah, and I've been at a couple of forums and led a couple that had the candidates there, and it's always an interesting experience. When you dig into it, you say, yeah, this is important. And the story they wrote, give us kind of a quick recap of what that is. Very interesting stuff.
So the story is that a former commissioner on the Corporation Commission, Gary Pierce, and his wife, and a prominent lobbyist here in Arizona, Jim Norton, and a utility owner in Pinal County, George Johnson, had been indicted by the feds on charges of conspiracy, bribery, fraud, wire fraud, mail fraud. You know, it's a pretty extensive.
It involves a project.
Series of charges. It basically involved, allegedly Pierce easing the way for a project in Pinal County and getting some rather substantial payments flowing his way in return. And he's got some splaining to do, I think.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. We have got the story up on our website, gbnews.com and suritasun.com, and we have the indictment there. You can read that. But again, this is, conspiracy, bribery, those types of things. Some very interesting stuff going on right here in River City or Arizona.
Well, a little bit north of River City.
Yeah.
Up in Pinal County, but, still very much a concern. Well, one, what else might have happened is always the kind of question that would pop into your head when something like this is going on. These are often not isolated incidents, but still, it's the statewide utility regulator, a member of that body, a former member of that body, is accused of getting more than $30,000 in exchange for making it a whole lot easier for somebody to get an $18 million wastewater plant built.
Yeah, very complex story. So go ahead and check out on our site. Dylan, do you have that up on your site?
Oh, but of course.
Oh, of course.
And the indictment, and it's some interesting reading.
TucsonSentinel.com, GBNews.com. So last week we had the county moving ahead with another plan to try to fix the roads. It involved an increase in the property tax, but maybe we're going to head in another direction?
Yeah, it kind of remains to be seen. The Board of Supervisors voted this week 3-2 to sort of move ahead with implementing that property tax that we discussed in great detail last week. But really effectively what they agreed to do was raise how much money that they are going to spend on roads. They didn't quite commit to a mechanism for doing it. And the two that voted against the property tax were Allie Miller and Steve Christie. And now Miller, who her reelection campaign was really based on her blocking a countywide sales tax, which is not actually something that anybody proposed during her previous term, is now says that she would rather have a county sales tax for roads instead of this property tax.
And there is right now a half-cent sales tax for Pima County, and that goes to the RTA.
Yeah, so it's not Pima County. It covers the county, but it goes to the Regional Transportation Authority. The Miller and Christie a little bit, and some of the other supervisors say they might be open to this idea. They just want to get some money to fix the roads, are talking about a different sales tax that would go to the county itself. And go to the perhaps be split up the same way that the property tax would have been, where that proposal was that the county would work with the towns and cities as well as paving county maintained roads to distribute the work all over through every jurisdiction.
So maybe what we've seen here in the past couple of weeks is an acknowledgement that maybe some of these smaller fixes simply aren't going to cover the entire bill for this, and that we need to do something a little more dramatic.
Well, the property tax, the amount of money that would have come in for that was rather modest. It wouldn't have been all that much for the average homeowner, and it would have filled some more potholes and paved a few more stretches of road, but it wouldn't be a magic fix. There is no magic fix with the fix we found ourselves in. We've got more than $1 billion that we need to find to actually fix our roads all over the county, in the city, everywhere. And that's just not something that you can pull together at the drop of a hat.
Right, and you said that it's not much for the average homeowner, and that is accurate, but it kind of depends on where you are in life. And this is one of the reasons that Steve Christie said that he ultimately voted against it, even though initially he was kind of warming to the idea. But he was getting a lot of calls out of Green Valley that said, look, you know, I'm on a fixed income, and lots of people, everything from TEP to my HOA, is asking for more money, and now here it's going to be another, you know, $18-$20 per month from the county. This is just getting to be too much. So would a sales tax be better for those people? You know, let's face it, when you're paying, you know, a half cent or whatever, it's a little easier to do it that way.
Well, it's you notice it less, even though you might actually end up paying a little bit more, but the amounts are so small here and there that really depends on what your lifestyle is like and how much stuff you're purchasing that is actually taxable. The one plus for a sales tax is that it actually captures some outside money. People that come here from elsewhere and buy things, retail, end up putting a little bit of money into the pot. And the minus, of course, is that it's somewhat regressive, and for people who are on fixed incomes, for people who are at the poverty level or working poor, it affects them much more than it affects somebody who's rather well off.
Very good. A story came out this week that it's a national level story, but certainly affects us because of our proximity to the border, and that is talking about the number of people who overstay their visas. Now, this has been talked about for years, but it's never really been in the spotlight, and that really is the source of a lot of what we'll call presence of illegal immigrants in the United States. These are people who came legally, but they just overstayed their visas, and that's why they're here. So they're
it's the largest group of people who have an unauthorized presence in the United States are those who came across a border with permission and just stuck around longer than they were supposed to. It's not the majority, but it's if you start breaking down how people ended up here, it is the largest group. It's the best data we have is that it's about 40%. But even that data is very fuzzy because it does not capture the people who, drive across the border to go shopping and don't go back. People who cross without being counted, if they're taken as far as the immigration authorities, the Border Patrol and CBP at the port of entry, if it just looks like they're going on a day trip. So it's even more than 40%, much more.
And whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. But this certainly, the release of this information certainly put a focus on the planned border wall and whether that was really going to be as effective as some people in government think it's going to be, when really a good chunk of illegal immigrants are coming into the country legally on airplanes or driving over, and they're allowed to come here. They're not climbing a fence. They're not being smuggled in trunks. They're coming over legally and just overstaying their visas. So really, the focus is on the wall, which, again, kind of chips away at that idea that this is really going to be an effective tool to keep out illegal immigrants.
As easy as it is to climb the fence, as easy as it is to go grab a 30-foot ladder and get over a wall that, is out in the middle of nowhere, it's a whole lot easier to buy an airplane ticket.
Right, and that's being done. And so,
thousands of times a day. It's, even though the sort of, the rate of illegal immigration is far down. And in fact, over the past several years, we've seen, especially focusing on folks from Mexico, actually, net negative migration. There are more actually leaving than there are coming. Still, there are people coming and going all of the time.
Right. Right. So anyway, some interesting stats to look up the number of visa overstays and what's going on with that. I want to revisit our conversation with Dr. Manny Valenzuela, who is on the first half hour from Sahuarita Unified School District. And you have some insight. Your wife is a teacher at a charter school. My daughter is a first grade teacher moving up to second grade next year after 4 years in first grade. So and she's in the Sahuarita District. I really want to emphasize.
So don't get her fire here.
She gives me no information. I tell you, it's like feed
no,
dad.
No inside scoop.
Feed dad stuff. And the answer is always no. So anyway, I'm still working on her. But I want to talk about two things. One is teacher pay. We again, our district has been addressing that. But it's tough to get people coming out of school maybe with 10, 12, 20 $1,000 of debt to take a job for $30,000-$35,000, knowing that they don't go up that fast. The rise in pay is just not that much. But I have felt teaching is somewhat like what you and I do as journalists, in a sense, not to be overly dramatic. It's a calling.
It is,
but
certainly.
But at the end of the day, you also need to pay the bills.
Well, if you want to have good people go be teachers and make a career out of it and, be incredibly experienced and good at their jobs, you have to pay them enough to actually, make a long-term living and make a life out of doing what they're called to do. And, much like the situation that we're in with our roads, where we didn't do a very good job of maintaining them for so long, we have not done a very good job of maintaining our educational system for quite a while, and especially paying teachers to do what is very important work. These are not just folks who are babysitting kids on a daily basis. They are helping kids learn how to think more effectively, and the more we forge into the future, into the knowledge economy, we want our kids to be smart and be effective thinkers.
And it was interesting to watch my daughter going through college and to see how much of the focus was on things like classroom management or teaching teachers how to teach.
It's a skill.
It absolutely is. And just because you're good at whatever doesn't mean that you can actually teach it. And it's interesting. I have taught beginning news writing on the community college level, and I was hired because I worked for a newspaper and had a little bit of experience. Then you go into the classroom, and I will tell you this. My first thought was, wow, these people are actually paying to hear me, which was a really terrifying thought. But they do that with they do that all the time with community colleges, that they're teaching, they're bringing people in who have work experience, and they value that, but that doesn't quite translate in the K-12 situation.
And you probably found yourself working harder to try and teach those classes than in your day job, trying to get yourself up to speed to do it, right?
Absolutely. Not that I was making a lot of money, but again,
trying to figure out how do you actually do it?
Absolutely.
How do you get this knowledge out of your head and into somebody else's? It's a very tough thing.
And you have all these different personalities and life situations, everything sitting in front of you, and you think, and I'm supposed to teach them too. So, okay, that is going to be it for our Friday roundtable for this week. My thanks to Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com for joining
pleasure.
Me. Thank you. We'll be right back with Matt Russell and Weekend Watch.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids
now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive.
It's now time for the Weekend Watch, the best way to plan your next couple of days. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in Silver City and Grant County, like exploring historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do, great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Matt Russell, how are you doing?
Well, it's Friday, Dan. Next question, please.
It's also a long Memorial Day weekend for a lot of people.
It is indeed, and the best place to start it is tonight at Kingfisher. Now, Dan, as you know, the Kingfisher Summer Road Trip kicks off this weekend, and it kind of takes its guests on a virtual tour of some of the most delicious regions of the country throughout the summer. Starting tonight and for the next couple of weeks, the road trip menu is all about the Southwest, so focusing on Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico, and look for these flavors and traditions to sort of weave their way through the drinks as well as the dishes. Of course, their full menu is also available, but I love going on the road. Make sure Kingfisher is a stop on your weekend ride.
Great, and another stop should be a block party.
Yeah, tomorrow is the fourth Saturday of the month, which means it's the fourth on 44th block party on 44th Street, just east of Palo Verde in Tucson's Craft Beverage Industrial District. In fact, it's just a stone's throw from where you're sitting right now, Dan. you're going to get tastings from craft breweries and distilleries and coffee roasters that all call that block home, with live music and games and movies and a convoy of local food trucks. It's tomorrow at 6 p.m. Great way to kick off the summer season.
And Matt, who knew we had a craft beverage industrial district? I certainly didn't.
Leave it to Tucson. Maybe UNESCO can come up with another category.
All right. All right. And you can save a little money here, too.
Absolutely. You know, our good friends at Fox Restaurant Concepts, they're going to be observing Memorial Day in a memorable way this year by slashing 25% off your entire bill on Monday at all of the Fox restaurants if you're a member of their E-Bites Club. Now, members of this club, Dan, get special deals and discounts throughout the year. No cost to join. Just go to the Fox website, foxrc.com, sign up with your name and email address, and to get that 25% discount on Monday, just let your server know that you're a member, and boom, that's it.
Very good. Hey, give us a taste of what's going to be in your column in Inside Tucson Business.
Yeah, you know, I love the flavors of elote, you know, that roasted Mexican street corn delicacy. And there's a bartender in town, Dan, who has discovered a way to integrate these flavors into a cocktail, or should I say cobtail.
Boo.
Are you with me, Dan?
Boo.
You can read this corny story in this week's edition of Inside Tucson.
As always, thank you, Matt Russell, giving us great tips for this Memorial Day weekend.
Cheers, Dan.
Thank you. Hey, this Sunday also come to the Tucson Pops Memorial Day concert directed by John Philip Sousa himself. Liberty Watch host Charles Heller is going to be there with the KVOI prize wheel starting at 5 p.m. Look for the big red KCEE tent at stage right, and that is at Reed Park. The Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. On behalf of our team here at KVOI, including producer engineers Tom Fairbanks, Ray Allen, and Ed Alexander, along with production supervisor Jerry Cross, station owners Doug and Mary Martin, and Buckmaster Show executive assistant Rosemary Brandt, I am Dan Scheer, wishing you a safe and wonderful Memorial Day weekend.